The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! One of the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, jeez.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we've done a lot of shows under different circumstances, but yeah, last week was strange. This week's stranger still. We had an opening round of football, which I think was an odd experience, but at least a bit of normality, and yeah, now even that's gone. Yeah, how do you make sense of it all?
Well, I really enjoyed the football, and you know, recognizing that we just should say from the outset that we know people are doing it really tough in Tigerland, but people listen to this podcast, so we can all pretend that football is the most important thing in the world. So what you'll get from us is lots of talk about second ruck rotations and not about issues of geostrategic or health concerns. So I actually really enjoyed the football. My overarching reaction watching the game tape just before was, I'm really enjoying this. I wish there was more of it coming this week.
I know. Although you did really miss the Tiger Army. I mean, just the ball bouncing up empty rows of seats was, yeah, that was weird.
Well, I
was just gonna, I preferred football with no football.
And I think the team missed the Tiger Army too, because whether it affected their play, I don't know. We easily beat Carlton in the pressure. But one thing it definitely did, I think we had 6 or 7 goals from free kicks. That doesn't happen when you have a Tiger Army ready, you know.
Banging for blood.
If you don't believe the crowd influences umpire decisions, just look at the statistics. They clearly do, about home and away teams. And the umpires were influenced to play more tiki-taki touchwood freeze in front of goal that otherwise the crowd would have got upset about.
I know. And look, just to reiterate what you said, yeah, there are a lot of people in really difficult circumstances. You know what? We can't say anything that nobody else has said, except I gotta say the football coaches say about, you know, sometimes you just gotta make it from the next contest to the next contest to the next context. And yeah, I think that we gotta stick to that principle, because trying to make sense of it all doesn't make sense at the moment. So, yep, now is the time to apply apply football cliches to your life. So, amongst all the strangeness, I did have a thought of, do we still want to do round one, game one? Like, I just feel like we get more than our share of weird umpiring interpretations that, you know, when people see the tape, they say, ooh, that looks a bit funny. And I did wonder that about Tiggy Touchwood defender contests, although, you know, it was only applied one end of the ground because, despite having Dustin Martin, Tom Lynch and Jack Rewalt, the Carlton defenders were so disciplined as to not give a single free kick away in defensive 50. So maybe it was just a couple of contests went wrong. But I thought, oh, do we get more weird umpiring in this game than any other game in the season?
Yeah, probably. And you know, your sarcasm there was noted. Look, it's sort of, that one's a funny one because you had two strange effects going on at the same time, no crowd and the first game of the season. Look, it's really good for us financially. It doesn't matter at the moment because we're in all the media. We are the story of the AFL right now, but, you know, there will be a time when we're struggling for relevance again, perhaps when we're in the rebuild, and it's actually nice to be the centre of the football world for one night. So, yeah, I mean, just like, imagine how much North Melbourne would kill for that position. First game of the season, all that exposure. So, yeah, look, it's a tradition now, and look, there is going to come a time when Carlton...
As he is beating them like a drum.
Yeah, and there is going to be a time when they beat us. Still, funny, okay,
not,
so...
Not today, Satan.
Not today, Satan, yes. So, like, to the game as a whole, probably a lot of what we talked about, and, you know, will suggest and even, you know, the final scoreline, the inside 50s, a lot of stats are suggested more even game. But I do just want to acknowledge right at the front, when we're talking about the game, is with 9 minutes into the third quarter, we were leading by 50 points. And at that point, it is statistically impossible to come back. So, well, just by historical record. So, you know, and that did, as Dimmer said in his press conference, which was an excellent press conference, by the way, you know, acknowledged that Carlton at that stage, you know, you throw the chips in the air, you gamble a lot, but you're not coming back because you might kick some goals, but the other team's always going to counterattack on you. So that's why no team has ever come back from that margin. So let's not pretend the game, it wasn't a 3-goal game.
From that point, no.
No. But, yeah, so acknowledge it, we did beat them like a drum early, but, you know, there were lots of other indicators that were more even. But, so just to talk about the game as a whole.
Yeah, there were both, like, as has been the case for a while, Richmond at Top Gear is just an irrepressible force, whether it's against GWS in the second quarter of the grand final, Geelong third quarter of the prelim, like that. The Top Gear is unmatched in the rest of the competition for now. And yeah, the sheer explosiveness as well. Although almost my favourite goal was the very last one when Sam Doherty gave Dan Rioli Doherty had a 10-metre head start. And still tried to flail at Dan Rioli because he knew there was no way he was keeping up in the sprint towards goal. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it was a really interesting game. The first quarter we just kicked their ass. Like we dominated the inside 50s. I think we had 18-8. We beat them on the scoreline. You know, we had more touches. We had way more tackles. We just destroyed them on the tackles and pressure racks all day. So that was, you know, pretty standard.
Yeah, pressure rating was 214, which is really high.
Yeah.
In that first quarter.
The really interesting quarter was the second one, where we got beaten by 7-17 in the inside 50, so the same margin that Carlton beat us. And they really knocked on the door. They got a couple of decent shots of goal. But right at the end of the second quarter, and that, we were really struggling with the contested possession in that quarter. Richo pointed out at one stage we were, I think we were more than minus 12 or minus 13 at one point for the quarter. And I'll tell you, their shots were not great. They were decent shots, but we, and the commentators described it, rope-a-dope, we absorbed for more than 10 minutes. And then just on the rebound, we kicked three easy goals, and that was the game, basically. And all those goals were set up by, sort of brilliant, Dusty Rioli and Bolton, you know, highly creative, very clever footballers helped set them up. So it's in some ways sustainable, but the flip side is, are you worried? The glass half full perspective is that we let Carlton dominate for too long, and that they could have kicked probably should have kicked two goals, probably three. But the other side is, if you want to take the glass half full, the more positive perspective, is that, you know, it was tactical genius. We sort of allowed them to get some half chances, but when we were getting chances, they were brilliantly good. And that's an incredibly sustainable way to play football. So yeah, there's two ways to look at that.
Yeah, you do. You convert a lot of your shots from the top of the goal square.
yes, indeed.
And I thought we weren't giving up very few really good marking, one-on-one contests. We were killing those. I thought the smaller forward, when they went to a smaller forward line, that caused us a bit of trouble.
Dimmel was quite annoyed by that, actually. He said, basically, in the press conference, he put quite a lot of time into saying what a good player Cruiser is, but basically it was good for them that he went out, because then they didn't have a big forward.
Casbolt competed quite well.
But I think what Dimmel was really referring to was the fact that because Casbolt wasn't in the forward line, it changed their structure.
I think this is an annual tradition for me now, but to remind you that Mitch McGovern is on the same amount of money as Dion Prestia.
Well, he took one nice goal. He's a nice kick for goal.
Yeah. So is Jacob Townsend.
Yep. Actually, it's not dissimilar. Probably his level of output over the season won't be that dissimilar to Jacob Townsend's.
I enjoyed watching him play for Essendon.
I hate liking an Essendon player. It's weird and wrong.
He's a special exemption category. But yeah, it's not going to last. In a game, and they didn't, how many of their goals were free kicks or 50 metres? Oh, and actually McGovern did do a terrible stage for a 50-metre penalty as well, as if I could disrespect him less.
Yeah, I believe it was 6 or 7, like we discussed. So, look, you know, it was funny, they actually won the inside 50s, having said that. There's a sort of, if you want to be paranoid, you'd wonder, because they do have some really good young players, and unfortunately Jack Martin's really good.
Still not as many as you would think. That was my impression. Look, I was, you know, Wiedering did a really good job on Lynch, Petrescu, Seaton looked better than I think we've seen him. You know, Walsh, no question, Walsh is going to be good. We're still, and Jack Martin was a problem. We really struggled to find a matchup. But they've still got so many of the Jack Nunes, Michael Gibbons. No, these are mid 20-something journeyman types, along with, you know, people. They haven't beaten us in a regular season, well, in a game for 7 years, but there's still quite a few of the players who were in the team last time they beat us. Jones, Casbolt, Simpson, Murphy, Kerno, Cruiser. There's a quite a core. It's both a core of older players and a bunch of journeymen. So I do. Yeah, I don't. The rebuild hasn't got a lot of depth.
Yeah, I think Jones was playing for the Bulldogs last time they beat us, in fairness. I agree, I know what you're saying, he's old. And as we've remarked before, it is, for a team that appears to have no depth, that, you know, they're a bit of a stars and scrubs team, that it's not like they've been, you know, religiously sticking to the draft and haven't refused to compromise by getting recycled players. Like, they appear to have had a strategy of, like, let's recruit basically all the GWS cast-offs to, you know, to make up the end of our list. And you compare...
And there was what? How many of them were out there? Lockie Plowman?
Yeah. Now, you compare that to, say, Richmond, and this is, Nick, where I want to take to one of my real positives from the game, say, Sam Baker.
You know,
Liam Baker, sorry. You compare, wouldn't they love to have a player like Liam Baker? I mean, he just, on the tape, he just stood out for, now he only had 14 touches because he didn't win much uncontested ball, but his 9 contested possessions were just pure quality. And, there were one or two moments where, in every game where his size matters against him. But watching the tape, I really didn't see that many times it was his fault he had goals kicked against him. There was one where he couldn't stop, Martin running back, but it might have been someone else. But other than that, and that it was a goal that he couldn't have stopped, yeah, no matter how he was.
I saw, yeah, he had one goal kick. We rotated a few guys against Martin. But yeah, I thought he really impacted the contest. Like, he just hit the contest hard, and sometimes it was little tap-ons to a teammate. I thought he fit in really well.
You might have seen, Nick, on Twitter, I did a little highlight video of two incidences where he did good things, and then I added another one, and then I had to stop myself adding two more, because there was just little things he did throughout the game. He's just he's a very smart footballer, and he's a very hard competitor. I have to say, you know, I said last pod that he's rapidly... If we didn't have him in so many favourites already, he'd be one of my favourites. Well, I think he's becoming legit... He is now my top 5 players, favourite players in Richmond, because he's just such a smart, determined footballer who works so hard and maximises the gifts that God gave him. I really enjoy watching him play.
He's a player development success story.
But also, Nick, a stats nerd success story, because he was a very productive, very very productive player in junior, but people didn't like him because he had an ugly girlfriend.
He's small and not super fast.
Yeah, but like it was a measurables thing, not a how do you play football thing.
That's true. And look, a lot of those guys don't translate to the higher level, so it's a real credit to him that he has. Speaking of young Western Australian defenders. I thought Stack was, he certainly flashed, like the way he hits the contest so hard. I love that. Pretty clean in his work. Yeah, defensively, he had a few issues with Martin as well. I thought, encouraging but a learning experience, I thought.
Yeah, it turns out he is human. Which was in question at times last year.
Yeah, we love him a lot.
But you know, I'm not saying it's a definitive survey, but incidents I noticed where he had a defensive lapse were higher for him than for Baker. But you know, look, the position's still here, and he's an absolutely beautiful kick at the football. And you know that just makes him valuable and. Helps him be one of the release options.
When he flashes from 20 metres away and just hits the contest at speed, it's beautiful. I love it.
Speaking of Western Australians, Nick, and 2019 draftees, Marlon Pickett, his game, you know, I think this is hardly revolutionary, but led the team by far on pressure points, pressure acts, took the Jack Graham mantle, quite respectable with the football, but Well, sorry, he only had 14 touches, so wasn't huge with the ball, which is sort of an issue at Hyde. But his game on tape, Nick, his contested work is great. Like, he tackles hard, he's got a strong body. I thought, like, on a second watch, his game was better than the first.
Yeah, and the when he just seems to have more time, you know, that cliche of, you know, he's able to twist his body or get out of a contest, and that, look, that does mean that he gets caught occasionally, but yeah, sometimes he breaks from a contested pack and gets just an extra yard of space, steadies and hits a guy on the chest, and it's beautiful. I was interested as well. I got access to the full Telstra tracker data, and his top speed was the second fastest on the ground after Dan Rioli, which, you know, he looks, you know, it certainly doesn't look slow, but you wouldn't quite, you know, you wouldn't expect that he, you know, his top speed was even faster than Shea Bolton's, for instance.
Shea Bolton's, Liam Baker's. Oh, that's right, Liam Baker's not that fast. But, you know, there's a lot of fast guys on our team. But it's sort of intuitively, it's always a good start with a new statistic that the person who's leading it is the person you expect to lead in it. And, you know, yeah. I would say Rioli is the fastest guy on the team. So, yeah, it is interesting that Pickett is the second fastest.
And our gut run stats were the number of team repeat sprints, which I think from the Conrad Marshall's book is the stat the club tracks pretty closely. Yeah, we were reasonably well ahead in that. So yeah, there was parts of our game that were great. There were parts of which that I'm sure made for an uncomfortable review session. But yeah, that was.
And speaking of Rioli, I thought he was very much a part of the solution. You know, his speed really broke up the game for some of the key goals. I just thought him and Bolton were extremely important to the overall success of the team.
They were really good, and George was good as well. I did think
George's pressure acts were right up, aside from the goals.
Yeah, and he's kicking straight.
I love there was a moment where George was in a huge hit with Cribbs, he lost the hit, because Cribbs is sort of the undertaker of AFL mids, but George got straight back up and kept pressuring Cribbs. He must have been sort of shaken. It was a big concussive hit, but George was just had the presence of mind to keep on tracking.
I think it was in the first quarter, there was a moment where Bolton picked the ball up you know, scanned, and then hit Jack. And I thought, you know, he still likes having a shot for goal, but I think finding that balance of playing within the team for a really unique individual talent. I think he's been fully Richmondized.
Bolton? Yeah, and I think, look, his skill's not shooting for goal, right? I mean, he was good on Thursday, but his real ability is his vision and his ability to stop on a dime and find his agility to find space where that none really exists. So, like, it actually, he's playing to his strengths.
Yeah. We've had a lot of positives. I think the only reason you can explain Jack Graham and Toby Nankervis playing, despite having not been in either of the preseason games, was that we were pretty confident about winning and we thought that we could carry them for the Collingwood game where we'd really need them, and we were worried about playing CCJ against Grundy because I thought both of them lumbered around the ground.
So I have a different take on that. At first I was sort of a bit annoyed that we played them because they were both underdone. But I thought about it from a team culture way, that it's sort of by playing Graham, like what message does it send by not playing Graham after that game? So, like to me, actually, I thought it was sort of, and some coaches have that rule, is you can't lose your spot through injury. Now, most of the time in practice that doesn't work in AFL, but I think my scenario was that, like, you know, imagine your Dimmer telling especially Graham that you can't play. Now, with Nank, even a fully fit Nank gets beaten regularly by a drum by Grundy, like he sometimes counterpunches. So, if that was the reason, I'm not as big a fan of that reason, because why not? You know, the same thing is, why not get some CCJ some experience, because he can't be beaten any less than Nank has been at times by Grundy, but any more than. But like if it's the first is, look, these guys have been warriors for us, they're fit, they put their hands up, they deserve a chance to play to prove that they can, can perform.
That's true.
I can live with that. And this was the emotional journey I went, because my first reaction was annoyance, because, you know, I think we're better. It makes sense to be playing Ross. We've got an old midfield. Even when we dominate the taps, we're not doing great in the centre clearances. We need to bring on another young midfielder. That was my sort of first thought. But then I sort of thought, you know, hopefully it's a 17-game season. We need... Graham deserves a shot. So I had mixed emotions on it, but yeah. I see your first point, though, why... your first point is that we both agree that they both looked underdone, but, you know, why they were playing is another question. Dimmer did say in his post-match conference, where he was quite expansive, really, as I said, really enjoyed it. He said, we really like the two rucks. We think we've got talented rucks. And it messed with our rotations when Cruiser went down. It was sort of interesting because both of them played hardly at all, and this is Nick. Good segue.
They both. There was about 10 minutes of total game time with both of them on the ground. Yeah, it was very little.
And the question is does that make more or less sense when you've got shortened quarters? Because by the way, for people who just it's 20% less game time, because you're not just losing the 4 minutes, you're also losing the time on. So it's not an unimportant change to the game. And does that extra time hurt the second ruck? Because because the advantage of playing two rucks is you beat the hell out of the opposition single ruck, and that gives you a time when he's exhausted in your dominoes. On the flip side is, and maybe it matters less when there's less time in the game, because there's less time when you're dominant. On the flip side, the danger of playing the second ruck is you lose, if you have a small go out, you've got less run, but there's less time where you're exposed, that makes sense, if you've got two rucks.
Yeah, the extra midfield rotations that everyone has to do aren't as onerous.
They don't go for as long, yeah.
Yeah, the game was... Look, round one is often pretty frenetic. It was pretty frenetic. Like, the players react to the less game time by, you know, just running super hard. But I didn't... The game didn't feel all that different, because it was shorter. You just sort of looked up and, 27-minute mark. There's a siren. I don't know. Is it something you'd want when, you know, whenever the day is, you know, the 2021 season and things are, God willing, back to normal. Do you want the shorter quarters?
No, I like it how it is, but I'm a traditionalist like that. I've got used to the 20-minute quarters. Frankly, I still want the sub rule back too. So, you know, don't ask me. I always like the last rule. Can I talk about Soldo, Nick?
Of course.
So fourth best rated player on Richmond according to Champion Data. I think, seventh overall, according to the AFL player ratings. Unfortunately, one of the moments that was missed was when Cruiser went down, was Soldo twice grabbed the ball out of the ruck and got a sort of 60-metre clearance by himself. he set up the final goal. He was big round the ground all day. Like, not big as in, like, his stats weren't immense, but he was physically impacting the contest. That last goal that, Bolton kicked, set up by the beautiful Pickett assist, it was Soldo who knocked it back in. There was another shot for goal where, Soldo was sort of competently, the key Rioli goal, out the back in the second, that was actually off a Soldo contest. He did little things all day, but we're not using, cause you had to look at Way at times about how he was beating up Casbolt. Casbolt's good taps almost all came against Nank. It wasn't a great day for, Ruck Lives Matters, cause, we had 41 taps to 26 and we lost the clearances. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We need to use that.
You know, their midfield bats pretty deep in contested ball winning, so...
Yeah, they've essentially got the best clearance player in the AFL.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the problem. I came away a bit worried about a round two game against Collingwood and their midfield. I thought, we've got to play better than that.
Yeah, and we've got to play... it was clearly, there were a few times when we won the tap and it went to flanks of Carlton players, and I thought, something went wrong there. I'm not sure we're quite used to playing with a winning ruckman, because it's happened so rarely over the last 10, most of our midfielders' careers. But, it's a fixable problem. Grundy's a whole different world of pain. We haven't mentioned Prestia yet. He was really good, as always.
Very much so.
Now career high.
We've hardly mentioned Dusty as well. Like, but both of those guys just felt like they just slotted back in and were really productive.
Dusty was equal second on the team for pressure acts, by the way. Third, in slightly undusty-like. And there were one or two moments where, yeah, he did look quite... Like, that free and 50 he gave away to Murphy was... that was quite sort of defensively aggressive by Dusty, I thought. Interesting.
I wondered if Martin had either said or... done something just before, because he looked really annoyed.
Yeah, he did. It was clearly a free, by the way. The commentator said it wasn't, but like, when you hear it live and you hear the whistle, he slung him ages after the whistle. So yeah, it was undusty like. But this is Mark Murphy, like, you know. Dustin Martin should barely acknowledge Mark Murphy's existence. by the way, Prestia is now in the top 15 in the AFL rankings, as a midfielder. Highest in his career.
Good times. Just to take a smug victory lap, I think 5 years ago, I said that Wietering and Mark Murphy will never play in a meaningful game of football together, and yeah, happy that still stands.
I reckon they'll be all right this year, but they've got a ninthy feel. Bad memories.
Still too soon. I want to recruit Paddy Dow in a couple of years. Oh, he didn't look good.
No, he didn't, did he? So you might be able to get him for quite cheaply, Nick, based on that. Not a great kick for goal, didn't get the ball much. What's he good at again?
He's a little bit different to his brother. He was a real clearance beast, but he's still quite physically undeveloped for an inside player. He did have one moment where he flashed really good side-to-side movement, like picked up the ball and just stepped sideways through a pack, and I thought, that's a flash, but it didn't look good otherwise.
Yeah, no, he did not. Just should mention that, just a little bit of a downer, that's not Vlossy's first concussion. He'd already been ruled out of the Collingwood game before the Collingwood game was called off, so, he's probably one who benefits from the break.
Yeah, a little bit of a concern.
On the upside, though, Koch had only 19 touches and sort of didn't dominate offensively, but just did a few of those special little Cochin tricks.
Yeah, which... and when you think about the reduced game time, that's actually, you know, around 24 possessions playing a normal amount of time. And I thought he looked really good.
Yeah, he looked like, and he's still doing things like picking the ball up, half volleys when at top speed, which is still a young man. As someone who's got hamstring trouble at the moment, I was sort of admiring that Cochin still has complete faith in his hamstrings despite his injuries last year. So that's a good sign that he's in good nick.
Hmm. I thought Jaden Short's defensive efforts were better than usual, which is perhaps faint praise. We do rely on him a bit more without Hooling in the team.
Yeah, we do. That was clear. I also, I noticed that, and he was running in slightly straighter lines. I think he's gone up slightly. I don't know whether it's maturity, whether it's also a bit of pressure from Bolton. Baker. He looked all right. Like, it's now actually pretty competitive bunch of small backs in that team because, you know, someone has to make way for Hooley when they come back. And, they're all pretty talented bunch. You know, on a one-game sample size, it's Sydney Stack, but, Sydney Stack's, you know, one of the most talented young players in the league, so it's not an easy backline to get a gig in. I'll just briefly, Caddy, although, you know, only 15 touches, but I thought, you know, if he's playing the Brando role of doing some of the fat side cover, or at least partly playing it, I thought he was all right. There was one, I put it on Twitter, but there was one beautiful moment where he's hard running back and he intercepted a ball. Because he's brave in the air.
And good in the air.
Yeah. I know the club doesn't use this measure, but his total running stats were good too. I thought it was Caddy's at least this stage in his career as a role player, but it's not a bad role.
No. It's a... good teams have role players like that. Really quite talented.
Yeah, and like we've become a role playing team. Like, I suspect all, you know, I'm sure Hawthorn was, late era Hawthorn was like that, but we're totally a team that's better than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, and the sum of its parts is very good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the most incredibly dominant key forward in through the final series last year, and he basically got beaten like a drum on Thursday night, and we still had an incredibly highly functioning forward line. It's just a sign of a very good team.
Yeah, and you know, it remains when Dusty goes forward, you know, opposition players quaking their boots like they were playing, you know. I've long talked about how much I enjoyed when he monsters tall defenders. He was playing against Plowman, who's full 8 centimetres taller than he is, and, you know, he ragdolled him at times. Yep, still love it.
Yeah, and so, Nick, we've got a bit of a problem here that normally at this stage we transition to VFL or...
the next game.
The next game, and we can't even really talk about AFLW because we sort of did the Epitaph...
Postmortem.
Last week. So, it's a bit of a hole. From a football perspective, obviously there's all sorts of real life reasons why we want this break from the football season to not be very long. But, the sooner that they come back, the better. So they, you know, they don't lose all their, we have something to watch, if we're still, if normal life hasn't fully resumed, and, you know, it'd just be really interesting. I think a Collingwood-Richmond game would be really interesting at this stage.
Oh, fascinating, yeah. Look, I read something about that they might be able to use a COVID-19 test that gets results in 10 minutes. So you could literally test the entire playing group, including umpires and support staff before a game, and, you know, just make sure that there's no risk to anybody involved, and that might make it feasible to have a season. But yeah, there's a huge amount of uncertainty, but yeah, the instinct of we've got a great team now, and it would be, you know, I'd love to see them play again.
Yeah, that was a really strong feeling I had watching them, as like, we're a great team, and like, I'm a Leeds supporter. Supporters probably always think this about their winning team. And this is a really fun team to watch. This is not a Ross Lyon team. This is a team that's it's relatively high scoring in the AFL. It plays a really, you know, when we don't have the ball, we're fun to watch because we're so relentless in the way we tackle and chase. We've got cult heroes. We've got fun. You know, we've got the most exciting player in the AFL. We've got old school key forwards. We've got cult hero rucks. We've got scrappy underdogs like Liam Baker. There's so much to love about this team.
Super, super exciting small forwards.
Yes, yes. As I said, one of the best young and one of the most talented young Indigenous players in the game in Sydney Stack. It's just I really hope we get to watch them play again soon.
Yeah. So while the football may not go on, I think our plan is the show will, and we're assuming that people have more time for podcasts. So we're planning on a show next week. We're still working out exactly what we're going to do, but looking at podcasting some classic Richmond games from the past. Before we finish the show, Andy, do you want to do a shout out?
Well, Nick, you might have noticed, listeners might have noticed before the show started that we had new music from Aaron Cook Music. I'll put some more details on our website about how you can look it up, but basically all the major new music production websites, if you Google Aaron Cook, you'll find him. As you can tell by the soundtrack, it's a really fun and exciting talented producer, and I loved what he did. I mean,
he's been doing music for us for years, and it's always been good, but I think this one is another level again.
And listen
to the end.
Yes, the end is his artistic brilliance. So thank you very much, Aaron, and we'll be back soon. I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! One of the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your arse!
Oh, she is. Had 4 shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals, you can make the case for being best on ground.
From Tigerland, we never weep until the pile of sirens gone. Like the tiger of old, we're strong and we're bold. For we're from Tiger, yellow and black. We're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.